broadcasting from Pod Bay 2A, a mile above sea level in Intergalactic Prairie Studios. We alter your locus coeruleus by warming your synapses with rejuvenative radio waves. This warms your brain to a tasty and toasty 165 degrees Fahrenheit to keep a sin flood of statism out of your head. Can you feel it, Ben Stone, the Bad Quaker? Is it working? Can you feel it, Ben?
I can feel it.
Excellent.
I can feel it warming my brain.
Yeah, you know, I used to say the radio waves warm your brain to a tasty and toasty 375 degrees Fahrenheit. But I was thinking of the temperature for cooking steak, and it's actually 165 degrees thereabouts. So I don't want to burn your brain. I don't want to burn you out. I just want to warm you up and cook you till you're tasty and toasty. Brains. Brains. All right.
No, that's the one you do with, that's the episode you do with
Davi.
With Davi.
And Randy. Yeah. All right. So, what is the topic in our ongoing 36 part series, the 12 steps, 12 traditions, and 12 concepts of world service of Alcoholics Anonymous applied to the problems of statism, loving the state, loving, thinking that you need a ruler, and, also, to a lesser extent, but an important extent, applying the ideas to addiction to bad people and bad ideas. What step are we on today, Ben?
We are on step 9. I'll go ahead and
read
it.
I got to say, wait. This is one. Uh-huh. There's two I've been looking forward to the most. So step 9 and also step 12. Those are my two favorite, pretty much. Step 9, especially because it's one that people don't want to do when they look through the steps. But once you get to it, when you've done them, it's the one that people want to do. And we're not talking about alcoholism here. I am in recovery. I'm 21, coming up on 21 years sober. And Ben stopped doing drugs about that long ago, but he still drinks like a gentleman, but alcohol was never really his problem. And we are not members of AA. I was for many years, but I don't go anymore, so I'm not violating my anonymity tradition by talking about AA on the radio. And we're really not talking about AA. We're applying these steps to our new 12-step fellowship, Statism Anonymous. And that's what we're doing. So, but what is step 9, Ben? Go ahead and read it.
So step 9 is, we may direct amends to such people whenever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. This is this is like the first real action thing where we're stepping out beyond just talking to somebody or counseling or thinking about
or writing,
it ourselves.
Or writing or doing, you know. Yeah, I mean, you know, there are several steps that are action-based. I mean, you know, turning your will over to a higher power, that's an action. But it's an action that's kind of like, you know, you can do sitting on the floor in your apartment. It's not action that requires leaving the house and confronting people with your wrongs and maybe even handing them some money. So, yeah, man. People... And there's a reason, I've said this before in this show, this series, I'll say it again. There are reasons these steps are in order, and they, because you kind of have to do the other ones and live with them for a while and internalize them before you're ready for the next one. You know, actually in AA, when they really hadn't codified it into, you know, what they had by the 50s, when this book came out, 12 Steps and 12 Traditions, They went through all the steps really quick, like in a couple days. Actually, you know, the second member of AA, Dr. Bob, he was making amends while the day he took his last drink. Like, he still had alcohol in his system, but he was a doctor and had one. He decided to completely quit drinking. He'd like talked to Bill Wilson, you know, the two first members of AA, pretty much. They decided on how this could work. They'd synthesized these other things into sort of a program. And, you know, Bill got sober a little while first and then went to his friend, Dr. Bob, who he knew had a problem, and said, "Hey, I need to keep other people's, I need to help other people keep sober to keep myself sober," which is step 12. And Bob agreed. He had a bad problem with alcohol. He was a surgeon. He was actually a doctor of the derriere. What is it? What do you call that? Proctologist.
Yeah.
Bill Wilson was a stockbroker. My joke is a stockbroker, a proctologist and a stockbroker go into a bar and they don't drink. That's my whole joke about AA, but it's true. So Dr. Bob, like, the day he quit drinking, he had a surgery scheduled he had to do that morning, and he had one beer to steady his nerves. And to him, that was like barely drinking. Like, that was his last drink. But he counted that as his first sober day, and he actually like had the beer, did surgery on someone's derriere, and then like that at like got down, you know, first got down and prayed, had his last beer, or maybe it was the other way around, did the surgery, and then like went out and started paying people back money that he'd owed him to for a long time. So he went from like step one to step nine while still drinking, you know, more or less. But that's not recommended. So generally it takes people, I would say, 3 months to 12 months to get through all 12 steps if they're working them properly. It could vary. People could do it in less. I don't know if they could do it in a day. But and there are people who balk on the fifth step or the ninth step for years and stay sober and don't do it, but they end up kind of crazy. All right, so let's talk about the ninth step.
Yeah, we should also kind of defend the 12-step program in general, because it's kind of taken a little bit of
12-step programs in general, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Because, you know, well, it's been stated that it's not scientific, and it's not. It is not scientific. It's not, you call it magic. It's not really what I would call magic.
No.
But, you know, but it is, it's not scientific. And the reason why it's not scientific is because it's based on so many variables. I mean, there's not one reason a person is addicted to something. There, it's not like you can't cut the brain open, look at it in a microscope, test it with a specific thing, and then put it back in your head and say, okay, now we fixed it. It's not like a transmission or a, you know, something like that.
Yeah.
The mind is a very complex thing. It has, you know, you've got mental state, you've got emotions, you've got positive and negative childhood events, you've got training that you've gone through over the course of your life, you've got relationships that are constantly changing, and you can't apply the scientific method to those things. So no, the 12 step programs are not scientific, but it doesn't matter. They work. And if it works, it doesn't really matter, you know, what kind of labels you want to put on it or anything. And like you've pointed out, Michael, it's really difficult with Alcoholics Anonymous to say what the percentage is. I know there's numbers that get thrown around all the time, but it's really difficult to say that because Anonymous is right there in the name. There's a very large portion of people who have gone through this who have chosen to keep that aspect of their life private.
Yeah, I mean, if you talk to somebody who's got a, you know, executive level job or even working at the local donut shop, you know, and say like, are you a former alcoholic, you know, recovering alcoholic who's a member of AA? Most of them are going to say no, because they could lose their job, or they could be judged, or, you know, because there's such a stigma with alcoholism and drug addiction that they're not going to answer accurately. There have been a couple things that have been going around in Liberty recently in the libertarian communities denigrating 12-step programs. And I will say this, it's not the only way to get sober. I've seen people use other methods. There is a bit of cultiness to AA, but there's a bit of but it's not a destructive cult. And it's only any way that it's culty. Libertarianism is also culty too. Libertarianism and AA both have, you know, their own set of language that people inside the group use like it's normal language, and people outside the group go, what are you talking about? Both groups tend to think that they're right and everyone else is wrong about a particular topic. Both groups tend to have little sort of gurus rise up within them. Both groups have people who take advantage of their guru status to economically or sexually take advantage of other people. I mean, I've heard a lot of complaints about AA, and those are some of them, but that stuff is absolutely entirely true in libertarianism. And I'd say both groups have too many people who let bad behavior continue among their members without checking them on it. You know, in Alcoholics Anonymous, in any 12-step program, they tend to brush it aside by saying, oh, well, he's still sick. We need to, you know, we don't come here because we're healthy, you know, and that's true. But people do get a pass on some of that behavior. And the same thing's true in libertarianism, I would say even more so. And I have been to thousands of AA meetings. I got sober in 94. I stopped going to meetings in 2006. I'm still sober. And I went to at least 3 meetings a week during that time. And the first couple years, I went to 9 or 10 meetings a week. because I was unemployed. I was unemployable for my first year or so sober. I couldn't even like function. So I just went to meetings all the time. I was in San Francisco and I was in LA later. And there's meetings like pretty much 24/7 in those cities. And I actually started an NA meeting called Lust for Life that ran for 10 years. I would never sign, you know, another complaint I've heard, like most people who have a big deal problem with 12-step programs, it's either they're still using and they had a spouse or girlfriend or boyfriend who got sober and left them because they got sober. That's not AA's fault. That's your fault for being still a drunk and, you know, not being ready for a relationship. The other reason, the main reason I hear people bash it is because they were sentenced there by the courts. And that's got nothing to do with AA or NA. That's the courts. That's the government. You know, it's, and I guess AA is, you know, 12-step programs can be somewhat complicit in that because they will sign those court cards. But first of all, there are meetings that don't sign court cards. And I never would sign the court cards at the meeting that I started. And the other thing is, you can cheat that, man. I'm not recommending anyone break the law, but you can go to the meeting once, get it signed, find the person's signature, and copy it. And they don't look at that very closely when you come back to the court. I'm not recommending anyone break any laws, but literally, you're not. You don't have to be forced there if you want to still be out in the gutter, you know, doing things you wouldn't do otherwise for drugs and alcohol. So those are not valid complaints.
And having the court force you to, like, step one is we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, our lives had become unmanageable.
Yeah.
Well, having the court force you to do that is not, you're violating the very first step.
Yeah, like AA and NA, like the 12 steps are literally a voluntarist construct. And, you know, forcing someone to do that is violating it. It's not AA, really, if you're forced to go there. So people who complain about that are complaining about something else. And, you know, psychiatrists and the military, the recovery industrial complex have a lot of reason to try to come up with statistics saying that 12 steps don't work, because 12 steps are free. They cost a buck. You put a buck in the can for the coffee in the room. And it's run by non-academics, and academics have a really big problem wrapping their head around something where, as the AA says, the butcher, the baker, and the candlestick maker do better than the doctors.
You and the hamster in your brain are listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends.
This show survives on donations from fiends like you. We put that money back into our show and Liberty Outreach and donate most our ad space to Liberty organizations that make a difference. We're also a teaching hospital, educating the next generation of Liberty talkers on the skills needed to keep the radio flame of truth burning into the future. Put your money where your heart is and make a donation of any amount to the Freedom Fiends. Please go to freedomfiends.com and click on the spinning coin on any post.
Freedom Fiends. Talking with Ben Stone, the Bad Quaker. I'm Michael Dean. We're talking about the ninth step of Status Anonymous, or Statism Anonymous. I want to define statism a little bit really quick. We use that word a lot, like it's a dirty word. We call people filthy statists. It is a dirty word. It's a dirty word you can say on radio. A statist is somebody who loves the state, who loves government, who thinks that all the answers to the problems of the world are just, we're just three laws away from perfection. We just need a little more government and things will be great. Those are statists. The thing about that phrase, it's used by libertarians so often, and now even neocons. Like, I've heard like Sarah Palin and Rush Limbaugh call Obama a statist. That's the pot calling the kettle black, man. That's they are statists also, and big time neocon statists. They're not even small government people like Ron Paul. They sound like anarchists. Neocons sound like anarchists when they try to make a point, but they're for all kinds of government stuff. They just don't want to pay for the stuff they don't like. And the real, true liberty idea is nobody should have to pay for anybody else's stuff. You should be able to keep all your own money. People can work voluntarily together to provide services more efficiently and without the threat of force that government includes in them. That's non-statism. Everything else is statism. The term statist is not something libertarians made up. We use it so often, it sounds like something we made up. We've kind of co-opted it. We use it correctly generally, but here's the thing. It's a political science term. It's been around for a long time. And technically, under the political science definition, anyone who is not an anarchist is a statist. Like Ron Paul, who's one of the most small government people ever, who is probably the only politician in America who actually followed the Constitution all the time. You know, that document that everyone worships and loves. He's the only guy that actually played by the rules, so I have a lot of respect for him. But he's a statist. The only people under the political science definition who are not statists are anarchists, and that includes anarcho-capitalists, voluntarists, people like us, and anarcho-communists, who I kind of laugh at because they're silly commies, but they don't want government. They want, workers' unions to replace the government or something. I've been around a lot of them. I've actually been around a lot in person a lot more than I've been around anarcho-capitalists. The only time I've ever been around a bunch of anarcho-capitalists was Porkfest. All my friends are anarcho-capitalists I talk to every day. Ben is pretty much – would you say you are one, or are you wider than that? Voluntarist? Yeah. I like to differentiate. I mean, you know, when I say things like I don't have a problem with small government libertarians. They're just ANCAPs, anarcho-capitalists. They're just ANCAPs who are still in the larval stage, which is something I came up with today and I heard the other day, and I kind of like it. You know, but people tried to correct me and said, well, no, it should be voluntarists instead of ANCAPs, because anarcho-capitalism is just one way of organizing society voluntarily without the government, without a government. There are other ways to do it. So it's more inclusive to say voluntarists, because all ANCAPs are voluntarists, but not all voluntarists are ANCAPs. But I just like the macho libertarian flash sound of ANCAP, because the word anarchist is a dirty word, and it really shouldn't be. It does not mean you want violence. It does not mean you want blood in the streets. It does not mean you want grandma to starve. And anarcho-capitalist, I just like using that word because it sounds like the worst of both worlds to anybody. Like, you know, to leftists and rightists are both like, you know, the right wingers are like, anarchists, that's horrible. And the leftists are like, capitalists, that's horrible. But I don't mind stating things as they are and not softening them down for people who might be scared of the truth. So that's, we are non-statists. We are anarcho-capitalists, Ben and I. And I don't even like saying we. That's why I asked him. True libertarians don't like to include. They don't. We don't like the word. We don't like the word we. How's that for a construct? Because people often speak as we in a collective sense that pulls people into a social contract. Like, well, we need to send more troops over there. I'm like, who's we? You got a mouse in your pocket? I don't need to send troops. I don't send troops anywhere. You do that with my stolen tax money. And we're not anti-self-defense. We like self-defense. We carry guns. We just don't think we should be paying for an ongoing war forever all over the world where America is acting, where any country is acting like the police of the world and thinking they should control everybody. Yeah, we're so small government, we make Ron Paul look like FDR. How's that?
That's very true.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that, I use the word anarchist very carefully. It's kind of like a hammer. You can really do a lot of damage with it, or you can use it in its proper context, and everything's fine. But I typically call myself an anarchist. But again, I'm very careful where and how I use that terminology.
Is conservative right wing radio one of the places that you want to use that?
I guess I did.
I guess you did. All right, we're honest. We'll be back talking about the Ninth Step. After that trip down the road. All right.
Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean. This is what radio sounds like now.
Are you tired of your taxes funding endless occupations around the world? Antiwar.com is run by people who understand that wars abroad become wars at home, wars on our freedoms. Antiwar.com is dedicated to bringing you the latest in news, views, interviews, and reviews from the top movers and shakers in the anti-occupation movement. Antiwar.com has it all, from thorough foreign policy analysis to interviews with whistleblowers who used to run the military-industrial complex. Anti-war, pro-free market. That's antiwar.com.
That was unbroadcastable, wasn't it? All right, so
yeah.
So Nima Vedati was supposed to be on the show today. We had him ready to go, installing Fiend Phone. And then his baby woke up. And so he's out raising little ANCAP babies. That's his solution, which, you know, some would say is better than just yakking on the air. But I miss Nima Vdadi, and I wish he were yakking on the air with us today. Don't you, Ben?
I really like Nima. He's really fun to talk to. He's unbelievably intelligent. Yeah. You know, I wish I was that smart when I was his age.
Yeah. Now that we're as smart as we are when we're our age, we're starting to, like, forget nouns and stuff when we're talking. Have you noticed that's, like, I don't know if that's a sign of Alzheimer's or what, but I can form complete sentences on the fly pretty quick. But I've noticed yesterday that what I'm having trouble with is nouns. Like, you know, I'll be talking about some complex concept, and I'll be like, you know, it's sort of like a over your world, you know, those things you carry with you and open up when it's raining. Umbrella. Yeah, that. It's like an umbrella over the concept of the ninth dimension, of the 11th dimension of time travel. You know, like I'm talking about something fairly sophisticated and using sophisticated parenthetical, conocentric, hypertextual phrases within concepts, within words that link all within each other. But I'll forget, like, spoon, you know, when I get to that part. Yeah.
That was actually kind of a running joke at my house for a while. I received a concussion. For any listeners that are new and don't know about it, concussions are like, you know, oh, the sun rose today and Ben got a new concussion.
Yeah, you've had over 30.
Yeah. So I had one concussion, and for 6 or 8 months after that concussion, I had a real problem of replacing a word with the wrong word, and it was always nouns. So I would be talking about something or other, and I would think that I was going to mention, let's say, the washing machine, and I would say refrigerator. Or I would, you know, maybe I was going to say doorknob, and instead I would say microphone. Or I would just, there would be a complete random exchanging of nouns for with no particular logic behind it. And it kind of became a running joke at our house. You know, because you have to joke about things like that when you're not sure if you're going to live or die, or you're not sure if you're going to go insane. You have to fall back on humor.
Yep.
So I should read the ninth step again, so we can kind of focus
on
that.
Yeah.
We made direct amends to such people whenever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. And like we said earlier, this is like the first of the steps that where you're actually going outside of the clinical setting. You're going outside of talking to somebody or thinking about it or praying about it or meditating. You're going outside of that, and you're actually approaching people who you know or you have known and taking a very uncomfortable action. And that can be really, really scary.
Yeah, it really can. It's hard for people in recovery, especially if they were drug addicts, to look at the possibility of making amends to people, because since drugs are illegal because of the government, and the government, the war on drugs does far more harm to people than even the hardest of drugs will ever do on a daily basis, kicking in doors, throwing flashbang grenades into babies' cribs, crippling them for life, not making any remuneration or serving any jail time for things like that.
Or even acknowledging that they've done anything bad.
Doing the opposite. They said that the people whose door they were kicking in were terrorists because they were selling meth. I don't think they even found any meth. Basically terrorists, you know, damaging a baby for life with an explosive thrown through a window and then saying, those people in that house were terrorists. That's the government. That's not even an exaggeration of, like, you know, oh, that's the extreme case. Like, they do that stuff all day long. Like, even just with words, like the I think it's the chief of police or one of the head cops of Austin recently said that he would basically rather have women risk getting raped than carry a gun. That's the government, man. That's what they do to you. So so drugs are illegal. So people end up, you know, committing crimes that they wouldn't have to otherwise to get them. So a lot of people who have done a lot of drugs look at the list of, like, the people they've harmed and, like, oh my God, I could never make amends to all these people, you know, especially financial ones. But a good sponsor will often pull someone aside and say, like, there are ways you can make amends. And this sounds kind of like a cop out, but it's kind of true. Like, there are ways you can make amends to people, individual people, and, like, people in general, that don't involve you know, working a minimum wage job and paying back $1 million to, you know, 100, you know, to 1,000 people the rest of your life. I mean, my first sponsor was a guy who basically stole Persian rugs from stores and homes and sold them to some Persian guys and traded them directly for heroin. Like, there was no money involved. Like, he skipped the middleman. And he said when he got sober, like, there was no way to even know, like, who he ripped off. Like, he could not remember. It was in different cities. It was all over, you know, this city he was in. Like, he couldn't even, in his best day, drive by and point at most of the houses or stores he'd done it from. It'd been so long ago, and there'd been so many of them. And, like, a lot of what he did to make amends was just basically put himself through school, got a really good job, started making a lot of money, lived a good life, and was really generous with people with money. Like, anybody, first of all, anybody in AA, like, you know, not that he would be a sucker and just hand money to everybody, but he would, like, take any newcomer, you know, man or woman, take him to lunch, buy him lunch, maybe throw him like $50 to help him out with their rent while they're getting back on track. You know, he donated to a bunch of charities. He would do a lot of charity and was really, I mean, it was hard to not know about it because you'd see him do it, but he didn't make a show of it. You know, it was like, it was what he did. So there are ways to make indirect amends when you can't make direct amends to people, but you should always make direct amends to people whenever you can. And often the hardest ones aren't the financial ones. They're the I was wrong ones, you know, yeah. And being confident but not cocky, looking the person in the eye, not begging and pleading up to them, not looking down on them smugly, but just looking them eye to eye and saying, like, I was wrong. And the biggest thing I think about amends that a lot of people don't get, and it's sort of in the book, but it's not talked about a lot by a lot of sponsors. A lot of sponsors in 12-step programs don't even know this. You shouldn't decide what the amends are to the person you've harmed. You know,
yeah.
I've seen a lot of people do that. Like, oh, I broke into your, you know, like, say to a friend, like, I stole all your records and sold them and, you know, got $300 for him. So here's $300. I'm sorry. Like, that's not necessarily what that person wants. They might want you to go back and find every rare record that you sold that was would be a lot harder to find than $300. Or they might say, don't worry about it. Keep your money. Stay sober and don't ever speak to me again. That would be a valid thing for someone to request as an amends. Generally, you should go to people, say you're sorry, say you're sincerely sorry, admit what you did wrong, don't make excuses for it. If they had some part in it, don't blame them. Don't say, yeah, well, I stole all your stuff, but, you know, you wouldn't give me a ride to the store that day. You know, don't make, or even if they did something valid, like if they did some small harm to you and you did a bigger harm to them, don't bring up the small harm that they did to you. You keep your side of the street clean and you don't worry about their side of the street. If they need to see it, they'll see it. If not, you're not making amends when you're pointing out what they did wrong that made you feel like you had the right to do what you did, you know?
Yeah, definitely. You know, and bringing this to a status anonymous kind of level, I worked for years in the aerospace industry, and you absolutely cannot, or at least I came to the conclusion, I could not work in the aerospace industry and not be exposed to some forms of supporting the military-industrial complex, because they're so intertwined and they're so married to each other.
Yeah.
And I felt horrible, especially close to the end when I really started to understand how evil the government really is. I really felt bad that I had put so much of my own effort, so much literally blood, sweat, and tears into the aircraft industry and then realizing what government is doing with that technology. And that's kind of one of the reasons I did the Bad Quaker podcast.
Drones, you built that.
Yeah, I had a lot more influence on Tomahawk cruise missiles than drones. But even that, I mean, you know, I worked on the Tomahawk cruise missile program. Ooh, yuck. And there's a certain amount of shame there that I have to deal with. But at the same time, I can't go back and find every mud hut in Afghanistan or wherever that these things have bombed. I can't go and find all those people and make amends to them. What I can do is what I can do. And one of the things that I have done is using my voice, using the talents that I have, using my experiences, my, you know, storytelling capabilities, whatever I can do to try to make amends as best as I can. And that's where my responsibility begins and ends. If I can't do it, then I can't do it. And, you know, you have to face that sometimes.
Yeah. That's quite an admission. Thank you.
Yeah. It's a little bit spontaneous, but not necessarily. I mean, I have to say that sometimes. I have to tell people that.
The worst thing I ever did using was, I just kind of used it as an example a minute ago in an amorphous, like not connected to me way. But the worst thing I ever did, and the only time I ever stole for heroin, was I stole all my roommate's records while he was out of town and got sober while he was out of town. And when he got back, admitted it to him, you know, because there was no way to not, I couldn't say, oh, someone broke in. You know, I was just like, yeah, I did it. And I've got a job and I'll pay you, you know, $25 a week until it's paid back. And he basically said, keep your money, move out, don't ever speak to me again, and stay sober. And that's amends. That's what I want from you. And I did it.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. You know, and there's also like the part about make amends to people except when to do so would injure them or others. And going to somebody and admitting something and having them yell at you is not you being injured. You can't get out of an amends by like, you might look bad. But I have heard a lot of smart sponsors say you don't want to go to the cops and admit to a crime you did because especially if you have a family, that's even actually in the book. Like there's a guy in the big book of AA who had stolen a bunch of money to support his drinking from his work. And he talked to his sponsor and he was like, should I admit it? And he said, no, you have a wife and kid to support. You will go to jail. Your family will end up homeless. What you should do is just sneak money back in over time. And that's what he did.
Yeah, and even if you can't do that, like you were saying a minute ago, this doesn't require you to live the rest of your life working a minimum wage job, paying out every dime that you've got, because that's not good for your family either. It might be better just to improve your life to the point of where you can pay back as best as you can.
Yeah, and that may mean deferring making some financial amends until you're in a position to do it. But maybe you should talk to the people and say that's what you're doing. There's no set course for any amends. It's more about the spirit of them. And
you're listening
There's no table of codes for it.
An invigorating alternative to those other shows.
Are you sick of government lackeys who say you didn't build that? Are you tired of elitists like Barack Obama and Al Gore taking credit for the web while trying to take over the web? Are you disgusted by experts whose concept of the internet is that it's a series of tubes? Take back the free market of computing by encouraging software developers to adopt the BIPCOT NoGov license. The BIPCOT NoGov license allows any use or modification except by governments. Go to BIPCOT.org. That's Bravo, India, Papa, Charlie, Oscar, Tango.org. Freedom Fiends, working step 9 in Status Anonymous. I'm Michael Dean. We're talking to Ben Stone. We're going to have some interesting changes in our traditions when we get to the tradition of anonymity. Because the AA says we remain anonymous. We are anonymous, especially at the level of press, radio, and films. And we are doing this whole thing on radio with our real name. So I think when we get to that part, it's just going to be don't be a jerk about it.
Yeah.
All right. So we went to the break saying that basically saying AA is not scientific or 12-step fellowships are not scientific in the sense that there's no actuary table for this sin results in this amends. It's different for every person in every situation, but it needs to be done in a way that you don't let yourself out of something you need to do. And conversely, it needs to be done in a way that you don't do anything that harms you or other people. And the other people part is really important. You know, I'm trying to think of examples I don't know. Like, let's say, you know, if somebody was a peeping Tom and, I've never been one. And this isn't about me. It is about me. I've never been one. But I heard a guy in a meeting a long time ago talking about that he was a peeping Tom. And he got sober And he thought that he needed to go around and knock on the door of every woman he'd peeped in her window and apologize. Dick. And, you know, people told him not to. And like one of the bad things I heard someone say instead to do was to write an anonymous note and slip it under their door. that would cause,
I was looking at you.
That would cause more harm. That would cause harm. It wouldn't undo harm. So, you know, people have to be smart about these. And that often involves bouncing them off another person, your Liberty sponsor in this case, and not doing them promptly, but not, you know, immediately. If you do things immediately and without basis behind them, you tend to do things that do more harm than good. And if you put them off forever, it does more harm than good. So they should be done promptly, not immediately, and with thought and meditation. All amends.
There's a really good line in the book, 12 Steps and 12 Traditions, that says, good judgment, a careful sense of timing, courage, and prudence. These are the qualities that we shall need when we take step 9. And that's really kind of summing up what you just said. It's good judgment, careful timing, courage, and prudence. And you can get a lot of the help in figuring that stuff out by depending on some kind of a sponsor, counselor, you know, good friend, somebody that you can be really honest with and is walking through this with you. And you got to trust them in that, because a lot of times, you know, you get a wild idea in your head and you think that's it. That's what I'm going to do. And if you bump that past your friend, there's a good likelihood that your friend might say, look, dude, that you might not want to do that because here's why. And that's the difference in having, you know, good judgment, which good judgment really is wisdom. That's what we're talking about. And just having what you think is a great idea, because and so much of the time,
alcoholics all have great ideas.
Yeah.
Every idea they have is a great idea. Every drug addict I've ever known who was lying in a gutter asking me for money, like I used to talk to them when I was using and then when I got clean. And then sometimes I tried to get them to go to a meeting. When I got clean, when people would say, help me out, brother, I'd say, you know, on the street, I'd say, want to go to a meeting? And they'd say, nah, man, nah, I'm okay. But sometimes they'd actually go, and I don't know if any of them ever got clean for it, but they might have later. But every like junkie drunk I ever met had a notebook full of tattered notebook full of great ideas, including me. Although I actually got sober and edited it and added more to it and became my first novel, Starving in the Company of Beautiful Women. But yeah, man, good ideas are not much without action, and a lot of good ideas that seem good are bad ideas, and running them by someone else that you trust, not for an opinion, but for feedback, like several different people. We've talked about this before. Like that's a good way to make decisions, is run it by 6 people you trust and 1 person you don't. And, you know, kind of like use your own fuzzy math to calculate the correct action after that.
Yeah. You know, as you were saying that about alcoholics and drug users, I was thinking, you know, that
I got to interrupt. And don't ask them for opinions. Ask them for experience, strength, and hope. What they've done in similar situations or what they would do. So go on.
Yeah. I was thinking of how many people who call themselves libertarians or people who consider themselves small government or whatever that fit that formula. They have a mind full of great ideas, and many of them have notebooks with, you know, scribbled notes of, this is how I would run the world if I were emperor. I would shut everything down and I would be king.
Yeah. And?
But when I'm king, everything will be better.
Well, when the aliens finally, in Alpha Centauri, finally hear the first radio show we did a year and a half ago, in 3 years, because that's how long it'll take the radio waves to get there, they're going to make me libertarian emperor of the world, and I'll be nice to everybody who is ever nice to me.
Hey, this is Squiscar Squiggles from Death Clocks, and you are listening to the Freedoms Fiends on the, you know, the radios. And I guess I says worms now, so there you go.
You've read books, attended lectures, and you know the Constitution well enough to know it's a well-crafted blueprint to create an ever-increasing federal empire. But there's still one thing missing.
Buttons!
Freedom Fiends now has buttons. You'll get state speech as hate speech, guns and weed,
buy sheep for sheep on sheep,
and 2 designs for the Freedom Fiends. Wear them with pride. Use them to start conversations with statists.
It's only $10 for 10 buttons, including shipping.
Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the link at the top that says buttons.
What does freedom mean? Tune in to LRN.FM to find out. LRN.FM is the Liberty Radio Network, a collection of live talk radio and podcasts, all coming from a principled pro-liberty perspective. LRN.FM show hosts aren't left, right, or conspiracy kooks. You can tune in 24/7 to LRN.FM via your phone, computer, satellite, and more. Listen free anytime at LRN.FM. That's LRN.FM.
This is the Freedom Fiends, broadcasting through the Libertarian Reindoctrination Center's low orbit ion cannon, high atop Financial Beast Plaza on the artificial satellite LibBear 2017 in the Alpha Centauri region. The Freedom Fiends is covered by a BIPCOT no government license. This allows any reuse by anyone except governments. Learn more at BIPCOT.org. That's BIPCOT.org. How are you doing, Ben Stone, the Bad Quaker?
I'm doing really good. I'm in South Alabama, which I really love, and living in, my wife and I live in our RV, and we travel around the country, and I really like the Gulf Coast. Of course, right now, we're in an RV park that's a very nice RV park, and just during the last commercial break, another RV pulled in right next to me. So I joked with Michael during the break that that I could open, if he got too noisy next door, I could open the window and yell out there, "Hey, I'm doing radio here. Shut up."
Or you could just
but
go,
that probably would
ask him nicely. You could ask him nicely. But if you, either way, he'd probably say, "Oh, I want to be on radio." People always want to be on radio.
You know, my wife and I have seriously discussed whether to have a sign that actually says
recording
on the air, on the radio, please be quiet or something like that. And we've decided that it would probably cause more trouble than good.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Or you could just have a big sign that says, like, how about one that just a big cardboard sign that says, "I have a hangover, I'm sleeping, please be quiet until," and then put a time.
In RV parks, that's kind of a given.
Or, you know, how about if just I'm sick? You know, I'm sick, but I'll be well in 2 hours. That sounds like junkie talk. I'm sick, but I'll be well in 2 hours when my check comes.
Yeah. So as soon as I get this needle.
I'm Michael Dean, and I'm talking to Ben Stone, the Bad Quaker, and we are talking about the ninth step of Statists Anonymous. But I want to say something real quick about my new intro. I think I'm going to do this on every show. Freedom Fiends are covered by a BIPCOT no government license. This allows reuse of anyone except governments. Learn more at BIPCOT.org. We are anti-intellectual property laws, which doesn't mean we're anti-intellectual. We like intelligence. I don't know. I'm not a huge fan of academics because they always think that they know how to run the world better than anyone else because they have a clear understanding in a very narrow area of one topic, of one subject. Which doesn't mean they know how to run the world, but they often think they know how to run the world. I like it where Penn Jillette from Penn and Teller, whenever anybody says the word Harvard, he says a swear word, like immediately, just like almost like Tourette's, like Harvard. Or like someone says Harvard and he says rooster. It's, you know, the other word for a rooster that you probably can't say in that context on radio, but just he says it like it's the automatic reaction. And he says it because whenever anyone's talking about that they went to Harvard, the last thing they want to hear is somebody just blurt out a cuss word like they have Tourette's. But I think it's funny. I really do.
Yeah, and he's explained the reason that he does that is because he has found the tendency of people who have attended Harvard will put that into every single conversation and almost put it in every paragraph.
Yeah. A really good example, I've been rewatching all the MASH episodes, and Charles Emerson Winchester III, he puts it into almost every sentence, every conversation. And, you know, of course, Hawkeye and Pierce, they don't say rooster loudly, but they make fun of him for bragging that he went to Harvard.
Frasier Crane on the Frasier show was good about that too. About, you know, slipping that into every conversation about how he went to Harvard.
He is probably based on Charles Winchester, Emerson Winchester III. He kind of looks like him, even. He's a very similar character, but I like that show too.
Yeah.
Yeah. So people, couple people from Harvard recently denigrated 12-step programs, Tom Woods, and I'll look up the guy's name, but it was somebody that he had on his show. Spent a whole and Tom Woods, he's a really good guy, and he's really smart, and I'm not bashing him. I'm just saying, you were wrong about this one thing. I mean, it was, we did a whole show on it, Lou and I did the other day. People can go back and find it. I'm not going to recap it, but it was kind of funny because the guest was also rightfully condemning the recovery industrial complex, which is the kind of thing where, like, you know, it's not going to an AA meeting. It's like, you know, it's a big money industry that combines 12-step ideology with psychotherapy and usually some course of vitamin treatment and some course of like confrontation therapy and group therapy and living in a home and being told what to do by people who've never had a problem with addiction. And they love to brag that their success rate of their $20,000 a month programs is better than the success rate of AA. I challenge that because, again, it's impossible to prove the recovery rate of AA because it's anonymous and people don't want to admit that they're in it. Whereas the recovery rate of recovery facilities, especially if you're court ordered, is easier to track because they're tracking you. They're keeping an eye on you. They're, you know, they know where you are and who you are and what you're doing, you know, and academics from Harvard, Rooster. And that guy was actually part of the recovery industrial complex that he was bashing. He didn't admit that, but he was part of a Harvard recovery hospital. And he is a $300 an hour plus psychotherapist specializing in addiction to the stars. Now, the thing is, like, neither him or Tom Woods have ever been addicts. And basically, like, to me, if you've I don't listen. I will not listen. And this is not being closed-minded. This is being accurate. I will not listen to anything anybody has to say about recovery unless they've actually, like, been in the gutter. You know, unless you've hit bottom and then gotten sober and stayed sober, you really don't understand recovery. And I said in the first hour about how, you know, people, it says in the AA book something about, like, that sometimes doctors are shocked by the fact that, you know, the butcher, the baker, and the candlestick maker can do a better job sobering up a fellow alcoholic than, you know, somebody with a PhD or an MD. But it's often true. And I have seen it in person because I went to meetings, you know, three to nine times a week, you know, for many years in San Francisco and LA, cities with huge numbers of people in recovery. You know, I would go to meetings with 400 people in them. I knew by first name thousands of people in recovery who stayed sober for years and improved their lives with 12-step programs. So that's not scientific. That's anecdotal, but it's provable to me. And, you know, nothing anybody can say about studies saying that expensive psychiatry and institutionalization works better than AA is going to convince me. And the thing is, like, so what? Like, they say that AA only has a success rate of 10% and other things that cost a lot of money and involve doctors and a lot of central planning, you know, have like a 50% or 60% rating, which is not true, you know, or the low rate for AA is not true because of what the things I've said. But so what if AA only has a 10% recovery rate? I mean, if drug addiction and alcohol addiction is such an insidious thing that if 10% of people who go to something that costs nothing and has no central planning works, I'm all for it. And part of the Tom Woods thing was he was basically agreeing with his psychiatric host that AA didn't have enough central planning and there was too much variety between meetings. Like Tom Woods, the king of the anarchists, was saying there needs to be less anarchy in recovery. That's what I heard. Is MK on?
Yeah.
Yes, I'm on.
MK.
Hey.
Hey.
I got the fiend signal.
You got the fiend's bat signal up in the sky. I'm going to turn you down here a little bit. I could do it on. Go ahead and talk. Go ahead and talk.
All right. How does this sound?
It sounds good. Go ahead and talk, Ben. We're doing live radio here. Ben.
Yeah. All right. It's good to talk to you, Megan. I'm MK. I'm sorry.
It's okay. She can be named. She can be named. Right. She's not she who cannot be named with us. Yeah.
Well, I know MK personally, and we've met several times and stuff. So, you know, it's odd. It's uncomfortable using words that you're not used to using, I guess. But
there you go. Yeah.
But I'll try. I'll try.
I understand. It's okay. Yeah, either one works. So. Yep. Yeah, it's been a while since Have we done a show together yet, Ben?
I don't think we have.
I've listened to a lot of your shows.
Yeah, I don't think we've actually been on together. Confused listening
for shows on host for being there.
Yeah.
All right. Awesome.
Well, that goes two directions. I've heard you a lot on the Bitcoin topics, and you know, at Porkfest and all kinds of things. And it just, there are certain people, and you're one of them, that it just seems like you've known them for a long time. It seems like you've done a lot of things, even though you know, you've been in the same places at the same time, and it doesn't necessarily mean that you were doing something together.
Right, yeah, right. Yeah, I get that experience a lot. So,
and MK, we're all going over something called Fiend Phone here, and MK just kind of jumped in. I told her to come on, gave her the credentials to get on, the password and the server number. But I think she'd been sitting there for a couple minutes and didn't talk. And we call it, when we have people do that, we call it the Lib Pair or Libertarian Paradise, the Lib Pair emergency alert system. Like it's they just kind of appear, because there's, so far we've been working just on the basics of making Fiend Phone, this software we're using to talk over, perfect and way better than Skype and freely available to anybody. And I'm raising money to make it better. You can go to fiendphone.com, FEENPHONE.com to donate or learn about it or even download it and use it yourself. But we haven't put in all the bells and whistles yet because, you know, we're paying a programmer. We're underpaying our programmer as we go. He's doing a lot. He's done probably $20,000 worth of work for about $2,000 so far. So, you know, and he's got a wife and kids and a job, so he's slow at doing it, but he's doing a great job with it and does it when he can do it, when he can work on it. But one of the things we've not added yet is some kind of like alert system, you know, like with Skype, there's the you know, there's no like when someone joins the call that you've invited, you just hear them start talking or see them and then talk to them. So that's what happened here. So we're talking about the ninth step of Status Anonymous, which is this 12-step fellowship that Ben and I have started. Have you followed any of these episodes, MK?
I've caught a little bit of many of them, I guess you could say. I was just listening to this one here. I only was on for a couple minutes. Like you said, I kind of jumped on and was able to listen. And I do find it fascinating because I don't have a lot of experience in this area. Like, I don't really, you know, I've never been an addict. So I've been learning a lot. You know, I've been trying to learn more about it, too. So, yeah, it's really interesting.
It's the ninth step is about making amends to people that you have harmed. You've probably, most humans who are ethical, and I consider you an ethical human, have probably made amends to somebody at some point or admitted they were wrong at some point, right?
Oh, yeah, a lot of times. Yeah. Yep. That's what I always like to say, is I've been wrong so many times, so definitely feel free to correct me. You know,
you'll fit right in.
Correction on.
So we're about to go to break here. Ben, you got anything set up for after the break?
Oh, yeah, I got extensive notes we'll be right back with.
Worms.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. So much truth, it hurts.
Is your child defiant, independent, annoyingly inquisitive? After a long, hard day of following the rules, who wants to deal with troublesome kids? 49% of children suffer from oppositional defiant disorder, or ODD. Symptoms of ODD include independent thought, rampant creativity, and failure to submit to authority. But now there's a solution. The good people at Pilfer can help you with their time-release, once-daily capsule, Compliacin. Your child won't be able to form his own opinions, let alone express them. It maintains your child's ability to go to a state-run school and perform simple tasks around the house. You won't have to worry about parenting, and the school won't have to deal with your kid asking questions. Compliacin. You'll go from this.
Quit telling me what to do! Quit telling me what to do! Quit telling me what to do!
To this.
Good morning, Mother. I love going to school. And this week, we're learning all about how the government is our federal family and they're here to help us.
Compliacin. Talk to your school psychiatrist and ask for it by name.
Okay. This is Michael Dean on Freedom Fiends. I'm talking to Ben Stone, the Bad Quaker, and NK Lords, the Wolfram Panther. I am the Iron Hamster. Ben Stone is the Bearded Possum. That's our radio wrestling names. So we're talking about the ninth step of Status Anonymous, the 12-step fellowship Ben Stone and I have co-founded for applying the steps, traditions, and concepts of AA to the disease of loving the state and thinking we need emperors and presidents and congressmen and mayors and city councils, and that people can't rule themselves, because people can rule themselves. And we're also applying it to the concept of, to a lesser extent but an important extent, the idea of addiction and dependence on bad people and bad ideas. So, Ben, will you read the ninth step again, and then we'll go into this a little more? Thanks.
Certainly. It's we made direct amends to such people whenever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's something else, too, I wanted to touch on. In regards to Status Anonymous and in regards to statists, just like with alcoholics, there are certain people who absolutely hate government and yet believe that they can't get by without it.
Yeah.
It's this weird love-hate relationship where they will readily admit that the government is the worst possible thing that we have other than to have nothing at all. And the fear of having nothing is greater than their hatred for the government.
A lot of neocons, mm-hmm. fall into that, you know.
Yeah.
They hate everything Obama's doing, and so do we. But they think that some Republican great man can dial the government back till you can drown it in a bathtub, and that's not going to happen, man. And then there's also a lot of liberals.
Yeah, you really hear the...
Go ahead, MK.
Yeah, I was going to say, you really hear the great man thing coming a lot more from conservatives, it seems like. I've been hearing the name, oh, like, we need Huckabee back in there. We
I
need,
don't know.
You know.
The liberals
because
do
this
it too.
Guy's moral.
Liberals do it too. You've seen all the pictures of, like, people at Obama rallies looking like they're in church having, you know...
A revival or
having
something.
Having a climax.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right, right. I've been hearing it a lot more lately with the elections coming up,
yeah.
I guess. All the frustrated conservatives.
I saw a good thing about Jeb Bush. It was a takeoff on, remember when George Bush conflated like a Who lyric and then something like an old nugget? Like he said, like, fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, won't get fooled again. I saw a picture of like George Bush Sr., George W. Bush, and Jeb Bush. And it said like, fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, she won't get fooled again. Vote for Jeb Bush. You're a fool.
There you go.
Yeah. And we're on in Florida on the station.
Several stations
we're
in Florida, I think.
On four stations in Florida now. But, yeah, so, you know, your son of the South there, Jeb Bush, anybody who thinks we're crazy because we don't think that he's going to restore the republic, you just wait, man. You just wait. He's going to be worse than Obama. Because at least with Obama, if you want to put on your minarchist hat, at least with Obama, the Republicans block some of what he does. But if you get a Republican who's like Obama in a lot of ways, like Jeb Bush in there, they're just going to just grease up the chute and send through everything that he does, man.
What a picture.
Yes.
Okay, let's see. We're on in Panama City, Florida. We're on in Tallahassee, Florida. We're on in Pensacola, Florida. And we're on in Sarasota, Florida. How many?
Rocking Florida.
MK, what? How many of those are in the, can I say Redneck Riviera, or are only you allowed to say that?
I think anyone can say it.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of what it is. So, in that region, probably just the Pensacola, Panama City, but Panama City is a bit nicer, I think I'll say. Redneck Riviera is a little, you know, it's not bad. You know, I really like most of the beaches down here. But yeah, you get to that kind of Florabama. Yeah, well, there's a bar called the Florabama on the line of Florida and Alabama.
Well, you're in Florida right now.
That's the height of the Redneck Riviera.
You're in Florida
right now.
It's actually
fun.
Actually, most of the Redneck Riviera is between you and Ben right now. Ben is in Alabama, and you are in Florida. We won't say where you are. We don't like to say exactly where we are, but you're within spitting distance of the Redneck Riviera, aren't you?
Oh, yeah. Oh, rednecks are fun to party with. I will say that. Like,
oh, yeah.
Say what you will about the Redneck Riviera, but those rednecks know how to have a good time.
I'd rather party with rednecks than San Francisco liberals, and I've known a lot of both. So, all right, let's really talk about the steps here. So before we go to this next break, Ben, give me your notes for the next part so we can set this up.
Yeah, so this little section I wanted to read from the book again, it says, we needn't wallow in excessive remorse before those we have harmed, but amends at this level should always be forthright and generous.
Yeah.
So you don't need to wallow on the ground and say, oh, I'm so sorry. You know, But you need to be honest. You need to be forthright. You know, let's get to it. Let's get it, get after it. And generous. Like you were saying, Michael, earlier, this is not a matter of trying to cover yourself with a half apology, a Clinton-esque apology.
Yeah. You gotta be confident but not cocky. And, you know, I think that's a phrase I came up with. It describes, like, my life goal, and I think the goal of AA is to be confident but not cocky. I think that's the wording we should put in the tradition about anonymity when we get to there.
Yeah.
Instead of don't be a Richard, just, you know, be confident but not cocky. Worms.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends, and I'm beaming these words into your cerebellum.
For some reason in this country, and in most of the Western world, it's okay to just judge.
Hey, this is Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends radio show. Computer programmer Derek Slopey and I have created FiendPhone. I'm using FiendPhone right now to talk with and record one of my co-hosts in real time. Take it, Davi.
Hey, this is Davi Barker, and I'm 1,000 miles away from Michael, but we sound like we're in the same room.
We sure do, Davi. So, Davi, please tell the nice people more about FiendPhone.
FiendPhone is free, no-gov software that opens up a global world of possibilities for collaborative, high-quality, remote voice media production, and I'm digging it.
People can try FiendPhone right now at FiendPhone.com, but we're also raising money to vastly improve FiendPhone and vastly improve independent talk media worldwide.
So go to FiendPhone.com to help out. Who will build the audio roads? We will, with your help.
That's FiendPhone.com. FiendPhone.com. Foxtrot, Echo, Echo, November, Phone.com.
FiendPhone. I never knew remote audio could be this good.
Broadcasting directly into your brain by needles attached into your frontal lobes. I'm Michael Dean. We're talking to Ben Stone, Bad Quaker, and MK Lords. All right, Ben, we're talking about the ninth step of Status Anonymous, and we really got to get into some meat of it in this and the next segment because that's all that's left in the show. And we've talked about a lot of good stuff, but I digress. So go ahead, man.
So in the book, it has, and the book we're talking about is The 12 Steps and the 12 Traditions by Bill W., 1953, I believe.
Sounds
anyway,
right.
There's a section in this part of the book where it sets up a scenario and it says, look, you've got this employee of a company, and you kind of referenced this earlier as well, but I wanted to touch it again. You've got this employee of a company. He's getting sober. He's attempting to work the steps, and he gets to step 9 and he realizes that he has done some really horrible things in violation of his employment status. Now, he can commit employment suicide by going to his boss and saying, hey, you know, I padded the expense account, or I did this, or I did that, or whatever. But the answer that the book says is that there is no answer. There is no set answer on how to do this. This is something where you have to bring wisdom. You have to bring judgment in.
There's no actuary tables for, you know.
Yeah.
Like, even in old religion, or in Catholicism, too, isn't there, like, you know, this many indulgences, this many Hail Marys for this kind of thing. I mean, it's kind of meted out by the priest on the fly. But, yeah, there's no – it would vary from person to person, too, and the person you're trying to make amends to, whether it would harm them or not. Yeah.
Well, the personality of the, you know, people you're wanting to apologize, that's a big – would play a big role and circumstance and, yeah.
I know in the corporate world that I was engulfed in for so long, if you were to go – there was so much among management – and among the salaried people, there was so much competition among them, and there was so much backbiting that if you would have exposed something like that to your fellow employees or your boss, they would have immediately looked for a way to capitalize on it and punish you or you know, some way expose you to the rest of the group to try to push you down, because it's like the old thing with the, what is it, with crabs in a bucket where...
Yeah, they try to pull each other
crab
down.
Mentality.
I think that phrase came from Florida or Louisiana, from what I've heard.
Huh. Wouldn't be surprised. Crab mentality is what it's called, and it's when the other people see a crab trying to get out of the bucket, they want to pull him back down so he can't have his freedom. And I would imagine that's pretty active in the kind of corporate world. They're going to look for things to exploit and maybe even blackmailed so they could get ahead.
And crabs in a bucket do behave like that. It's not probably conscious. They're probably not like, oh, those other crabs are getting out. It's probably more like crabs in a bucket will just intuitively try to grab onto things, including a crab that's above them, you know, because they think they can pull up from it. So, you know, I actually have an example of we were talking about people who earlier about people who hate government but still believe in government. A really good example was my first AA sponsor, and he was a pretty wise guy. But you know, he actually we were still friends for years afterwards. After I moved and found a different sponsor and then left AA, but he actually doesn't really like me anymore because I say there should be no government, or he won't. He doesn't like. We're not friends anymore on the social network. So, you know, he thinks that's too weird. But when I got to the point of making amends, you know, he looked at my 600 or so people I had resentments to and 300 or so people in institutions that I felt I had harmed. And he just crossed a bunch of them off on the list. And he said, you don't have to make amends to the government.
Wow.
Yeah. And I agree. But it was kind of interesting that he said that, you know, he said like anything that you've done to the government, like they do, they take so much from you and they try to control you so much that you don't have to make any amends to them. I agree.
You know, taking this also in a different direction, and I kind of mentioned this a little bit earlier, but let's say, for example, that you're hearing these 12 steps as we're going through them about Status Anonymous, and let's say that you've recently come to an understanding that government is bad and to force people to pay for programs you like is bad, and you start to understand more and more that all government is based on socialism and socialism is based on theft, and that's bad. And you start to really get, you come to grips with these things. But the problem is you work for the government, or you work for a contractor for the government, or you're a cop, or you're a soldier, a politician, or, you know.
Or a family member of one of those. And you know what? If you expand that to family members, even immediate family, that's a majority of the country probably.
And you might find yourself in a situation where you absolutely have to quit. Or maybe not. You might find yourself, you know, where you need to just be ruthlessly honest with your coworkers, or maybe not. Maybe that, yeah, but maybe not. Maybe that'll cause more harm than good.
Yeah.
Or, you know, taking it in a radical direction, activists try to do things to set people free in one way or another. And maybe there's some way that you can safely and honestly do something, even from working inside the monster that we recognize as government, while you're trying to work your way out of it, maybe you can do good things in there, just not, you know, not robbing people and forcing them to support your ideas, because that's the bad part of government.
Yeah, I think when people first get into anarchism, there can be that extreme push and that drive to pull other people into the same philosophy. I know it happened to me
that's
when
another
I first
way,
became an anarchist.
That's another way that liberty is very much like L.A., or like AA. Newly minted, newly sober people and newly minted libertarians want to preach it in the street and convert everybody. Mm-hmm. And with time,
and they don't always get it right.
Yeah.
And they don't always get it right. Yeah. And it's a good thing that the passion is there, but it's a hard thing to bring other people into it. You can end up alienating them. So I did a presentation at Libertopia kind of about this, incorporating it with Bitcoin, but it was called Everyone Hates Activists and How Bitcoin Can Change That. And it's based on this article called Everyone Hates Activists that show that whether you're social anarchists, so, you know, social types of activists or other forms of activists, a lot of times their activism ends up alienating more mainstream people. Like they did these polls and your average person finds them kind of annoying and kind of put off by the radicalism of it. So they tend to be more comfortable with, you know, less radical activists. And my point of the presentation was, you know, Bitcoin allows you to do activism in a non, I guess, offensive way, or non, you're not quite as out there and in people's face about it. But maybe that's kind of a tactic for getting your message across without alienating someone.
Good stuff. You know, I think that the idea that I mentioned before about when you make amends to people, it's all about keeping your side of the street clean and not worrying about their side. Like, a really good example would be, you know, in a relationship, like if the husband was an alcoholic, the wife was not, and a lot of words were exchanged various times over the years. you know, when the husband gets sober, he probably should make amends by apologizing for the times he was extreme in his words, even if the wife was kind of snippy back at him. You know, first of all, he probably put her in that situation by being a drunk around her. Or, you know, the thing could be reversed. The wife gets sober and the husband doesn't, whatever. You know, you don't, when you make amends, you don't say, I'm sorry I did this to you, but you know, you also did this other thing. You don't say the, but you did this other thing. That's their thing. That's their side of the street. Your amends are just about, proper amends are just about keeping your side of the street clean. And I think that could be extrapolated to the idea of, you know, when I say I don't want it, like when Ben left working for the government, you know, it's not, and a lot of people would say like, oh, well, it wouldn't make a difference. You're just one tiny part of working for the military industrial complex. It didn't dissolve because you left. That's not an adequate, you know, it's not an adequate game plan. And the thing is, it's not a game plan. It's about keeping your side of the street clean. You know, you can't change the whole world. All you can change is yourself, whether it's in addiction or whether it's in liberty. And you can live by good example with other people. And I have a message, you know, for people who are newly minted liberty people and want to do the, you know, I'm in the street with my hair on fire, look at me kind of activism. You know, there's a saying in AA, don't tell people you're sober, show them you're sober. You know, because, and it's really good advice because people are so used to alcoholics over and over and over saying, oh, I quit drinking. You know, and they're not doing anything to change why they drank, and they're a dry drunk, and they usually get worse because, you know, it's, I do believe in the I don't know if it's a spiritual disease model of AA, but I do believe in the addiction as a disease model. That's something else I wanted to mention is recently there's been a whole lot of other talk going around in Liberty. There were, Reason Magazine did an article about this study of somebody who's some psychiatrist, some part of the, you know, industrial, recovery industrial complex, had with this scientific study that proves that the addiction model of, you know, the disease model of addiction is wrong and that anybody can just quit whenever they want. And that's the results of this study. That has not been my experience or the experience of the several thousand addicts and alcoholics I've known personally who've gotten into recovery. But that thing got really shared a lot in Liberty. Like all of a sudden, like everyone was sharing it. And really, I think it's that, I'll say this, I think a lot of Liberty people want easy solutions. They don't want to be told you have to work to change. And they will, of course, they'll click like and share an article that tells them the easy, convenient truth of, oh, it's mind over matter. A bunch of scientists said so. And but those are the same libertarians that will like doubt it when those same group of psychiatrists were the same type of psychiatrists would say, gun ownership is a mental illness. You know, that's the same kind of people that say that. So don't believe all the hype and don't think you're doing activism by clicking like and share on something.
Yeah, and I think you can be of the opinion that, you know, maybe there should be more ways to treat addiction without having to bash what has been working for a lot of people.
Why would so, that's the other thing? It's like gone through why would someone like, bash something them, that works? You know? Yeah, why is there this sudden need to bash something that has, you know, has worked on millions of people since the 30s, you know?
Well, I think part of it could be the kind of faith-based approach in some ways. I have heard a lot of libertarians and anarchists criticize that because they're like, why can't it be based on, you know, secular principles or
it
something
can be.
Like that? And it,
can
yeah,
be.
That's
AA
as far
can
as
work
know,
for agnostics.
Can be, and there are people working towards it.
And atheists, so, absolutely.
I hope more research comes out that kind of shows, you know, all of the varieties of ways. But there's not a, it seems like in general, maybe there's not as much focus on how to treat addiction as there is, well, let's just punish the people who are addicted and throw them through the prison system. And
stuff. It's also that psychiatry, and I would say that, you know, most of the alternate methods come under psychiatry. Psychiatry is pretty much at the point that medicine was at when it was practiced by barbers.
Yeah.
You know, it really is. I mean, you know, they've only had psych meds since the 60s and they've only had targeted psych meds for about, you know, 20 years. And most of them have so many like side effects, including suicide. You know, like how are you going to treat suicidal tendencies with something where, you know, one of the things on the label is may cause suicidal thoughts.
Right.
Yeah.
It's terrifying.
I'm not saying psychiatry is horrible. I'm saying it doesn't have all the answers and it's in its infancy. And it's got a lot of agendas, too, man. It's all mixed up in the state now.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and some of his weird friends. And yes, we're broadcasting this into space.
All right.
cool.
Is your child defiant, independent, annoyingly inquisitive? After a long, hard day of following the rules, who wants to deal with troublesome kids? 49% of children suffer from oppositional defiant disorder, or ODD. Symptoms of ODD include independent thought, rampant creativity, and failure to submit to authority. But now there's a solution. The good people at Pilfer can help you with their time-release, once-daily capsule, Compliacin. Your child won't be able to form his own opinions, let alone express them. It maintains your child's ability to go to a state-run school and perform simple tasks around the house. You won't have to worry about parenting, and the school won't have to deal with your kid asking questions. Compliacin. You'll go from this.
Quit telling me what to do! Quit telling me what to do! Quit telling me what to do!
To this.
Good morning, Mother. I love going to school. And this week we're learning all about how the government is our federal family and they're here to help us.
Compliacin. Talk to your school psychiatrist and ask for it by name.
Freedom Fiends. Redemption in the third act. The final segment of Ben Stone, Michael Dean, and MK Lawrence talking about the ninth step of Status Anonymous. What you got, Ben?
So I wanted to read this little section right at the end of this chapter of the book. It says, above all, we should try to be absolutely sure that we are not delaying because we are afraid. For the readiness to take the full consequences of our past acts and to take responsibility for the well-being of others at the same time is the very spirit of Step 9. And I wanted to differentiate here between, you know, fear should not be a motivator in your actions, but it should also not keep you from acting. Fear has built within it one of the aspects of fear, one of the most damaging aspects of fear, is ignorance. Now, that's not stupid. Ignorance means you just don't know about something. And one of the main components of fear is that you don't know whatever it is, what's going to happen, so you anticipate something really bad. And so if fear is based on ignorance, then deal with the ignorance and get past the fear and don't let fear be the thing that keeps you from making amends or that keeps you from acting almost on anything. I mean, you can take this out in so many directions. There's this event that takes place right before you crash a motorcycle. And let me just say that I know this with great levels of confidence. You're on the motorcycle and there's this split second where you realize that there is an absolute inevitable moment that's coming at you and it's going to involve your face hitting the ground. Now, the fear is, will I live? Will I be horribly disfigured? Will I feel tons and tons of pain? So that's where the fear is because you don't know what's going to happen. But what I found with specific accidents like that where you could see the accident about to happen, you know it's going to happen, there's this moment of dread that comes upon you that can really make you do stupid things. Well, it's the source of panic. It's where panic comes from. And panic is acting upon that dread, acting upon that fear. And so if you can get past that and realize the situation, and I hate to put it like this, but I've had so many motorcycle wrecks that I learned how to wreck, how to fall, how to crash, go into it, into the roll, get away from the motorcycle so that it doesn't climb up on you and burn your legs off or chop your feet up in its spokes or whatever. And you learn how to react to the crash. And to a certain extent, I learned that the hard way when I was trying to figure out how to surf as well. You learn how to crash. And as you learn that, you go beyond that fear and you start to get to the point of where when the crash starts, you can begin reacting to it, not out of fear, not out of panic, but out of logic, and you can remain a certain amount of calmness, and you end up being a lot less hurt if you're going to survive it at all. If you're not going to survive the wreck, you're not going to survive.
That's a good analogy for the dealing with the ninth step and with life in general, with a bit of fear, but not dread. And fear, we talked earlier in another episode about the seven deadly sins list, you know, when making the list, looking at that most things that are, you know, on that list are natural impulses taken to a perversion. Like greed is the desire to support yourself and your family and, you know, make something in the world, taken to a crushing end. And lust is the natural desire for love and procreation and, you know, maybe a little something on the side, but, you know, that taken to like the point where it becomes rape or controlling relationships. And I would say that dread is the natural impulse of fear, which exists to keep you from getting into dangerous situations taken to an unhealthy obsession. And I would also say that finding the balance between these two things goes to what I said before about, you know, being confident but not cocky. Be confident but not cocky about making your amends, and about fear versus dread. You know, confident is having fear and listening to it, and dread is just having your limbic system overstimulated all the time, like a lot of talk radio does. You know, people get addicted to this adrenaline fix of like, look what Obama's doing to you. He's destroying, you know, like that. I don't even listen to that stuff. I don't even pay attention to politics, really. You know, there's a scene in Fight Club where they get into a car accident with a parked, unoccupied car intentionally and like put the seatbelts on, but let go of the wheel. And somebody's trying to grab the wheel. And the other guy, who's actually the other side of his brain, says, you're always trying to control things, always trying to take control of the wheel. And that is kind of AA stuff taken to a comical perversion. But I was in a car accident shortly after getting sober with a sober driver on a sunny day on the 5, Burbank, California. Just somebody bumped the back of our car. Like basically we got accidentally pit maneuvered. Like somebody just touched the back of our car in traffic going 60 miles an hour. And we spun 2.5 times around across 4 lanes of traffic and ended up on the other side of the road, wow, facing the opposite direction. I did not see my life flash before me, but I did have the conscious thought of, I may be dead or in a body cast for a long time. In that split second or two, I thought about grabbing the wheel from her. I was a passenger in the front seat, and I did not. I said, don't take the wheel. If I had taken the wheel, I probably would have pulled us into another car or truck, and it would have been a lot worse. We ended up fine, shaken on the other side of the road. And that's always been kind of an analogy for me personally. And, you know, wow, I think a final thing here about the fear and dread and the confident but not cocky. Okay, I'm going to admit something. We're coming up on a month. The Fiends, the whole show, is coming up on a month, getting our month chip in Status Anonymous. By that, I mean, we said on the show we have a secret of something we're changing. What it is we've stopped going after libertarians that we strongly disagree with and bashing them often. We don't do that anymore. The Tom Woods thing is an exception. I wasn't bashing him. I still think he's a great guy. I just think he was dead wrong on the AA thing. But coming up on that, what I will, on our 1 month chip for the show, what I will say is that the main thing that bugged me about all those people is they were cocky and not confident. When somebody is so sure that they're right, that it makes them wrong. And I just don't think it's a good thing to look for entertainment or especially moral guidance. And there are people who generally claim to be giving moral guidance, man. Yeah. I think they got it wrong. I think you need to be confident but not cocky. And that's the end, that's the takeaway in the ninth step of Status Anonymous. Thanks, MK Lords. Thanks, Ben Stone, the Bad Quaker. I'm Michael Dean.
Thank you.
And go to freedomfiends.com. There's more fun stuff there. Worms.
Worms.